believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Ay, papi. Oh, mierda. You.
Never gonna keep you down.
Steve Stevens.
Bookie Killer.
This is the Cap Figure Podcast. My name is Ron DiPaolo. Who are you?
Bookie Killer, Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Tom. So this is the Cap
Call
Figure Podcast.
Call me Bookie.
All right, sorry. Hi, Bookie. Sorry, sir.
Killer.
Oh, well, that was a big pause between those words. All right.
Pause for dramatics.
Got you, Bookie Killer.
I am not a robot. I'm a Bookie Killer.
So this is Cap Figure Podcast episode 54. Before we get into all our blazing baseball action that I hope will be exciting, and I know will be exciting. I'm not afraid of being arrogant today. Who are some players who wore the number 54, Tom?
Yeah, so the most famous number 54 is Rich Gossage, also known as Goose Gossage.
The most famous, based on what criteria?
The Bookie Killer.
Okay, so, okay. He pointed to himself as he said the Bookie Killer.
The Bookie Killer. 22 yeah. years wearing number 54. Also the highest WAR accumulated. And then what's interesting is we have a big jump. Goose Gossage wore it for 22 years, and then the next highest is Irvin Santana, who's only worn it for 12 years. So there's that big gap in between. A few of the other players you will know are Aroldis Chapman, Sergio Romo, Sonny Gray. And then one other interesting tidbit is Clayton Kershaw wore 54 when he got called up in 2008, but has since switched numbers.
What does he wear now?
I think it's, 37?
I thought it was like single digits. This shows how little I care about numbers. Yeah, I don't care about numbers. But it's funny that neither of us care, and it's a bit on our show.
The longest running bit.
We plan on getting to episode 100 rather quickly, so I guess the bit will have to end.
99 will just be Judge.
And then that'll just be it. Or we won't even have to say it according to you. He'll be so godlike that it'll be like number 3. Like everyone will just know. It's funny they're all pitchers. I don't think of baseball numbers ever like being like football where, you know, this number wears this.
Well, I listened to a game recently, and there was a starting pitcher who had a single-digit number, and the commentators were like kind of bashing him. They were like, he's a pitcher. You got to have a double-digit number. It would be like an offensive lineman wearing number 13.
I never heard that ever. I didn't know that was a
thing. That's reserved for Dan Marino, not for, you know, the center or
yeah.
the offensive
but
guard.
But I think there's actual rules in football that's a reason. In baseball, it's just old man stupidity if they're mad at that. In football,
how
you
dare
actually
you?
Can't be a number, like, high number if you're here. All right. So this is what we're going to get into today, right? The MLB draft taken. I got some sizzling takes. Tom has some sizzling hot takes. And then also, given Aaron Judge's beastness, Tom has some body image issues. I don't know how to phrase your segment. We'll call it Tom's having body image issues with Tom, right? Because Tom is an obese girl who doesn't believe in fat shaming. No, but since Aaron Judge is John, whatever, we'll get to that later. And then we're going to update our little gambling pool. And by little, I mean big. Where we've been testing out different ideas on baseball betting and tracking. Thank God it's fake money because I haven't been winning. But with our baseball betting theories and seeing how that's going. So we'll update that. But first, today's Wednesday, right? June
yes.
14th. The draft began on Monday, right?
Correct.
And how many, just before you get my sizzle, how many like two-way players, of the first five, two were legitimately two-way players, right?
Yeah, so the number two pick, Hunter Green, is a right-handed pitcher out of Southern California High School. He throws 102 miles an hour. He also was classified as a shortstop and would have been a first-round pick as a shortstop.
And then the Louisville kid who the Rays took is like
right.
a pitcher and a first baseman catcher, right?
Right. Tampa Bay Rays took first baseman Brendan McKay out of Louisville. He is a top five pick as a first baseman, but was also the best left-handed starting pitcher in the ACC.
Word. All right. Well, here. I'm going to be yelling at Buster only, all right? Lately, a lot of people... The game is getting more specialized, huh? Fuck you, sports writer from 3 years ago. You're damn wrong. You were damn wrong. And Ra-Ra's here to shame you, right? Put you in your rightful place. So take your damn tail and put it between your legs, Buster-oni. I don't know why I turned into a black preacher. Ain't no goddamn lefty specialist gonna take a roster spot on my team, right? These right. damn two-way players. You talking about specializing the game, man. That was just goddamn Babe Ruth's coming out who could play both places, right? I'm trying to commit. But seriously, this is tied in with like, so... It's the counterbalance to people saying that there are utility players who are good at everything, but at the same time, somehow there was this sentiment that the game is getting more specialized and players are getting more and more pigeonholed.
Yep.
But to me, clearly this draft indicates that maybe it's the opposite. And the other thing that absolutely clearly shows the opposite is that pitchers ain't going damn innings anymore, right? You tell me that... You got my starter going only 15 damn outs, and then you want to have me having a guy to just get one goddamn batter, a lefty goddamn specialist, man? Ain't nobody going to let me take up a roster spot for some scrub going to get me one out when my starter only got me 16 outs and I got 10s to go? What the hell kind of crap is that? Specialization? You retarded sports writers from a couple years ago. This is the opposite. And obviously, all right, black preacher voice aside... Seriously, maybe it's because the learning curve, and this is, I give you credit for making this point, the learning curve is matching the athletic curve, right? And so, you know, we always knew in Little League, the best pitcher is often the best hitter on the team also, yeah. right? And now maybe because they've optimized learning positions better and better, you would think over time with technology... Maybe the natural athletes just get to stay doing that because it doesn't take as many hours to become a top-level shortstop as it used to because they've made the learning efficient, right, obviously?
Yes.
So then just the top athletes are going to stay at a two-way player higher and higher.
Correct.
Like every – even in football, every D1 college player, you hear them, it's so stupid. They're like, he was a quarterback in high school. It's like, duh, you know, like he's
yeah.
the best player. And so it's funny, though, that at the same time they've been talking about specialization. And I don't know. I fell into it, but I just believe these goddamn sports writers who were wrong. Maybe. I don't know. That's my sizzle.
Yeah, I think there's something there, right? Because, as you mentioned, in the first five picks, there are a lot of these guys who, you know, being a left-handed Friday night starter at the University of Louisville, that's the number one starter, but then also being a top five bat in the draft, like that is not an easy accomplishment
it's
on
insane.
Either end. That is insane. And I think that teams are smart to take those players, right? Because like the Minnesota Twins passed on this guy, Hunter Green, who throws 102 miles an hour as a pitcher, would have been a first-round pick as a shortstop.
You mean the first overall pick? Or,
yeah.
Oh, he got drafted as a pitcher, as is?
Well, yeah, he got picked number two.
But as a pitcher is the idea?
Correct.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But,
so go on. Yeah.
But he, look, that in mind, he still has that quality where he can be a shortstop. I think it's a very good plan to do that because... You know, if you take someone who is just a pitcher and they blow their arm out, like you're totally done on that pick. Whereas, you know, you have a plan B with this guy, right? He was going to be a first round pick as a shortstop. So you have sort of like a backup plan. The talent is still there. And, you know, best case scenario, yeah, he becomes a starting pitcher. He can be a pinch hitter. Michael Lorenzen on the Reds does that. So, you know, as much as there is this specialist movement of, like, lefties out of the bullpen who throw specifically to power left-handed bats, you know, for each guy on your roster who can do something like come in and be a starting pitcher but then also be a suitable pinch hitter against, let's say, lefties or righties, that's one more roster spot that you free up because you don't need another player just to do that.
Yeah, and just, again, you just even fell into it. It's in a way... Just there, talking about the lefty specialist, there. If when there's a bunch of Davinskys and three inning pitchers soon, they can't exist. They cannot live in that world.
Correct.
Lefty specialist. So it's like you need to get multiple outs. And also with that, maybe you'll see less righty-lefty lineups, how like Joe Girardi loves to go righty-lefty, righty-lefty. That might be such an old-school thing pretty soon. It's funny to think about. But obviously it'll still be relevant. So as long as guys still have reverse splits, it's going to be that way. So you think the Twins are dumb, though, to be clear, and not taking that guy?
I think it's they're going to regret that decision.
Who
I
did
think.
They take? What was the guy's name?
They took a shortstop also out of California. His name is Royce Lewis.
But he's not good enough to stay at shortstop, they're saying. He's going to play center field, Keith Law said.
That discussion, I'm not smart enough to decide whether he's going to stay at short or center field. He was always mentioned in the top 10 picks. He's got high upside, but you just passed on basically LeBron James' ceiling talent in Hunter Green, right?
But if teams can't envision a way to use both, even though I just attacked them for, I attacked sports writers for believing in the specialization movement, can you blame teams for, like, if they can't envision a way that they get to use both of his sets of skills, then can you blame them for just taking who they think is better at one set of skill? Like, you know what I mean?
The reason that I'm blaming them is, as a small market team with their first number one overall, I think there's this, like, I hear a lot in the media saying, well, you got to hit on, you know, 1-1. Like, you can't have somebody totally whiff, right, because you'll lose your job. But to me, like, you need to either, like, hit a home run on this pick or you fail. Like, I want the best possible player, and when that doesn't work out, you know, I'm, like, all about upside.
But so do they, though. They want the best possible player. What's the difference?
But I think that they took the safer route. I think they took the player that they know can maybe contribute.
And is part of your argument, though, that like, it's almost taking, like, you're drafting two players in one, because if the pitcher version of Hunter Green fails, then you get the shortstop version?
Right, yeah. He has the highest upside as a pitcher, but then he also has a backup plan. So
it's, like, funny that he was taken as a pitcher and the other kid, what's his name?
McKay
on Louisville was taken as a hitter.
Right.
But he says he wants to play. He doesn't seem very happy that the Rays drafted him.
who is?
Yeah, nobody.
You know?
So, hey, no, shout out to the Rays, our boy Jake. Love you.
I mean, I think he would tell you the same thing, right?
No.
Like, they're like, you
dude,
know, it's the Rays. Come
I
on.
Just don't want to feel pop-ups with a white ceiling, like the ball of the sport you're playing with, colored ceiling. All right, yo. So we could talk more about the draft and stuff later, but what is this body image stuff, right? Like, I'm calling it body image stuff jokingly, but you texted me, I'm just only going to give a little preface, but that you asked me, texted me the other day, do you think with Aaron Judge's success that players will, scouts will look at players his size differently?
Yeah, it's tough to exactly point to what I'm getting at, but it just struck me, right? I looked online and there have only been, like, you know, 12 major league players that ever got 1,000 plate appearances that were 6'6 or taller. That's a very small amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, for a number of things. They say, like, they don't have control of the strike zone, their swing isn't, you know, nimble, whatever.
Their dicks are too big, they said, I read.
But, you know, to me, that very small number points to, like, some sort of inherent bias of scouts, of organizations, of maybe even at the stage of 12 and 13-year-olds, like, this guy's going to be, you know, really big. Let's have him play basketball or football instead of baseball. And so what I was really trying to get at was, you know, Aaron Judge has the biggest, you know, BMI, body mass index. He's the biggest player, like, in the history of baseball. So will that affect, you know, 11 and 12 year olds who potentially can be a linebacker in the NFL? Will it sort of affect their decision, and will this change anything down the road?
Oh, well, that's a very good question to ask. I misunderstood when you asked me that, because yes, if you look at it from the youth level, if I had a kid and he's going to be 6'8", say I had a magic wand or a crystal ball This teacher in middle school, by the way, said to my mom in a parent-teacher conference, I don't have a crystal ball or anything, but I think Ryan has a learning disability. And my mom was like, you bitch. No, not really. But anyway, my mom was crazy.
Ryan is special.
A crystal ball or anything. Yeah, my mom was like, not my snowflake. All right, so, but a crystal ball. So say I had a crystal ball and I knew that my kid was going to be 6'8". I would say, look, mofo, screw baseball. You, day one of being alive, have a super big advantage at playing basketball, right?
Yep.
And so it makes sense that kids would be funneled one way or the other. And I think what you're saying makes sense. I think that makes more sense, though, than the other way, that because of something in their size that they're not doing well. I think it has to be 90% of this has to just be that the big kids are playing other sports, right?
Yeah,
where your size more comes into play.
You have to go to the start of the funnel, which is, you know, the coaches of 11 and 12-year-olds and the parents who push them one way or the other.
But do you think there is an actual downside to being big? We've debated this because Carlos Correa, I remember hearing a thing 2 years ago about, they were like, he's going to gain weight and they might have to move him to third base. And I was like, why? That's retarded. Just because you get bigger doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be slower, blah, 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 blah. And you were like, no, I sort of understand profiling based on body type. What do you think now? Do you think that it's fair to say this guy's huge, he's going to struggle with his strike zone or something like that?
Well, it all has to be on the individual basis.
Yes or
right?
No, I want a hot take.
Because as your body is bigger, like all things equal, you're going to be less flexible, right? So you do need to have that sort of blend of both. But I do think that the bigger players, maybe myself and like, you know, the public and baseball people, like, overestimated how much of a disadvantage being big can be.
And what were the disadvantages, as you say? I know you referenced it, but what were the actual...
Yeah, so like if you're 6'8", right, like, you know, 6'8" could mean like your bottom half is 4 feet tall. You know, it all depends on the sort of proportions of the person.
But yeah, in general,
all things equal, you know, it's just a bigger strike zone. There's more area to cover, you know, sort of, and, you know, with that bigger strike zone, combined with less flexibility of being a huge person.
Yeah, it's harder to play infield, I know.
It's harder to cover, you know, the whole strike zone. And so you can be exposed.
Oh, that's just batting. Yeah, and in the field, I know it's harder to bend down. Just
right.
If you extreme it out, a guy who's 11 feet tall is going to have a longer route to bending over to fielding a grounder than Jose Altuve.
Yeah, Rich Piana is going to have a harder time fielding ground balls than Jose Altuve.
Because he can't bend over. But Aaron Judge, maybe that's why they're all outfield beasts, because, like, you see him and it looks like he took two steps and he covers so much ground. But
yeah,
now it seems that you have led the charge, and I don't... It's not because of Aaron Judge's play. It's because of Tom McLaughlin on the Cap Figure podcast that Aaron Judge is now the front runner for the AL MVP. It's because of you. How do you feel? Because you said, Ryan, you're being stupid. Correa and Altuve, get out of here, bro. Aaron Judge is going to be the front runner. And now everyone jumped on your bandwagon.
It means what it means. I'm a genius, and y'all are just...
What?
Y'all are just hating.
Y'all are just hating. That you should feel admired. And do you feel any different after your research or thoughts about body size? Do you agree with me anymore about the Correa stuff? Like, oh, he's going to gain 10 pounds. He needs to be third base. Like, don't you think that what your conclusions are about Judge would lead you to maybe come over to my side a little?
Yeah, I do think that I'm on your side a lot more than I was. I think the data that we have was so poor in nature regarding this. Like, I was searching for hours trying to find like relevant data, and all of these articles that were written all referred to BMI, which is body mass index, and that's arguably one of the worst possible metrics you can use to judge this situation, because BMI literally only takes into consideration the height and weight of a player.
Right. So then, like, Donovan McNabb ends up obese by BMI, stuff
right.
like that.
That's why, like, literally one of the articles that came up every time, no matter what I searched, was 68% of Major League Baseball players are considered obese or overweight. And it's like, yo, look, he's 6'4", 240 pounds. He's jacked.
Yeah, he's jacked.
Right, like, right. That's not... like his BMI is high, but we're not in the 1970s saying like, oh, your weight determines. Like 190 is either fat or jacked. So
I guess that's the only way to do, to like quickly though look up guys' height and weight. It's like height divided by weight, and then you go from there. But I wonder by position what. Obviously, like we said, I assume infielders have to be short. We know this as a matter of fact that infielders are shorter than outfielders, except for first baseman maybe.
Yeah,
and then outfielders can be taller and they can run. So and pitchers obviously are tall. Because the longer their legs are and the longer their arms are, the more ball speed they can generate.
Right.
But it
but there are outliers in every situation. Like, you know, when you're tall as a pitcher, the likelihood that you're able to throw it straight is a lot lower than, you know,
right.
Marcus Stroman, because there's more moving parts. There's just, like, a greater degree of, like, angle you can mess up. But, yeah, being bigger is almost always an advantage.
I feel you. Yeah, and you know what? Somebody as famous, if he wins the MVP and somebody being as famous as Aaron Judge, really could make kids, at least in New York or wherever, you know, his jersey is by far the most popular selling of the Yankees right now, be like, look, that's a big kid. I don't have to play basketball. I want to do baseball, blah, blah, blah.
Well, the one thing that kept sticking out to me was, like, if Aaron Judge played football, right? Like, if he became a linebacker, what are the percentage chances of him making, let's say, $25 million in his career? What he's doing in baseball, that seems like almost 100% chance.
Yeah.
And he, in football, you know, that percentage chance gets a lot lower just because of the, you know, the career spans of football players.
Well, duh, though.
You're not getting hit.
No, yeah, duh.
Well, it is duh. But
on the top end, everybody knows baseball.
But that's not sort of where the flow has gone.
The flow is just because what are the percentage chances that you're going to – you already outclassed like majority of the field by being 6'8". That's
right.
Why. It's not because of money. It's because like you have way an advantage. It's like starting from scratch in baseball, or a disadvantage almost, as compared to a super big advantage, right, going into another sport. That's
yeah,
the
yeah,
difference.
That makes sense.
But the money is no debate, because you'll have Jell-O for brains and forget your kids' names by the time you're 41. Or you'll be like Antonio Cromartie with seven baby moms with nine babies. All right, yo. You got another sizzling take about the 10-day DL? Lance McCullers screwed me this week in my points league because they just put him on the DL for 10 days with some vague BS injury,
lower
right?
Back stiffness.
It's like a hockey injury, lower body.
Yeah, so the 10-day DL was implemented this past offseason.
And we loved it. We were like, yeah, it's a good idea.
And so just naturally as a result of what we are seeing is a lot of teams are exploiting this advantage and they're putting players, mostly starting pitchers, on this 10-day DL to limit their innings over the course of a season. So you see this in winning teams. The Astros and Dodgers are two great examples. Everybody on the Astros, their initial starting staff, they're five. All five of them have done either one or two stints on the 10-day DL.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
So far. And lower back stiffness, McCullers, I don't think so. He's just thrown five great starts in a row.
Yeah, yeah. That's like the pain clinics in Florida where you used to be able to buy painkillers. They could do an MRI of your back and
find
anything.
Something wrong.
Yeah,
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 yeah.
And you could have a perfectly healthy back.
And so,
what was the Dodgers stat you had?
It was, they've had more active players on their 25-man roster this year than any other team ever has up to this point in history. They've had 43 players, so that means 18 of their players have been cycled through.
That's insane. And you know, we're on pace for the most pitchers to appear by a mile this season. I mean, it's happened every year the last couple years, obviously, and I looked it up. But at the same time, the starters' innings actually isn't as straight up on a 2015, 2014, you know what I mean? Like, the number of pitchers to appear in games, it literally is straight up like 2007, and then it goes 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2017 on pace to break 2016's record.
Right.
But innings per start started out really like the lowest this year, but it's not. It's a little more messy. It's like the 2000s and mid-90s are sort of jumbled together, which surprises me. I don't know what that says. I guess that says once teams go to the bullpen, maybe they're willing to do more. Or it says just about count. The other takeaway is what we're talking about, DL stints and teams more being aware of limiting their young players' innings and just having a six-man rotation and experimenting with different stuff like that, right?
Yep, yeah.
Because they can be simultaneously true that starters, we may still be headed for three-inning pitchers as well as more different pitchers from an organization get in. Obviously, I guess those right. go hand in hand. I don't know if I'm explaining what I'm saying well, but...
Well, the Yankees last week, which pitcher was it? So one of their pitchers was scheduled to make a start, and he didn't. And so what the Yankees did was they did almost exactly what we were saying. Chad Green, who's normally a one- or two-inning guy they bring in when they're blown out, he started. He went two innings. They brought in Adam Warren. He went three innings. They called someone up from AAA. He went three innings. So they went that route. But more and more what we're seeing is there's a lot of these winning teams have one or two great starters, and then numbers 3 through 9 are just like a hodgepodge of garbage. Like just so it doesn't matter whether
right.
Joe Musgrove or, you know, I don't know, Francis Marte from AAA comes up. These teams have sort of built this depth to be able to withstand, okay, we are going to go 9 starters deep in our
right.
rotation.
No, that's well put. And then that still allows for what we were saying where there's less specialization, like not guys, you can't waste a spot on a guy who's going to get 2 outs.
Right.
You need a good bullpen with all guys who can go an inning or whatever, right? And yep. then you can have the super deep rotation with guys who can make spot starts. I'm going to look up after this episode how many starters each season appear. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Not just how many pitchers appear, because either way, it's gone way up. So one more thing before we update our betting pool and results. In the show, obviously, I reference it a lot. This is where I get a lot of my baseball information from, and it's where I first started to...
Sony PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it's for the PlayStation 4. My name is Wise Jadakiss on there. You can
challenge
me and go down. They adjust player ratings week to week, and 4 of the 5 of the starting rotation of the Cubs, Arrieta, Hendricks, Lester, and Lackey, all got lowered 2 points out of 100 overall over
okay.
the weekend. That's a big statement from MLB The Show. What do you think of that?
So just you said the Cubs, each of their starters.
All
were...
4 of them, Arrieta, Hendricks, Lester, and Lackey, all got -2 to their total overall rating this
okay.
week.
Well, I mean
that's a fucking shots fired by the show.
Shots
bro.
Fired, yeah.
But they are 500.
They are 500.
Why the Cubs suck, Tom?
On the production side, on the hitting side, you have Rizzo and Bryant are their best hitters. We knew that, but even they are producing, I would say, lower than expected. But then
Shorty.
Everybody else in the lineup, I mean, it's a disaster. Addison Russell has like a .62 OPS.
Hayward sucks. The contract is as bad as we thought.
Hayward, like, people are getting excited because he's hitting .250 now.
Ha! Schwarber like, sucks. Schwarber
is
totally
horrible.
Not what we thought.
Even Ian Happ, who they called up, who has a lot of power, he is exactly a 3 true outcome player. So I think it could almost be they're stacking too many of these guys up because I think in a lot of cases you see they go through, like, their first – time through a rotation and they strike out 7 of the 9 spots. So they're not producing offensively, but on the pitching side, yeah, I mean, you just look at the numbers, they're giving up almost a full run more than they were last year.
Yeah, and they had the Cy Young winner 2 years ago. Like, Arrieta's fallen off.
He has fallen
a lot.
Yes.
That's a big difference. You know, he was winning every start, every fifth day 2 years ago. Lackey's a year older. I mean, they're still... No one would have thought they'd be 500, but maybe they're like the Astros last year, and they may just be great the rest of the way. But
yeah, I think they're still going to
Javi
probably...
Baez has fallen off, right?
He has picked it up recently. He's been one
but
of the bright
dude,
spots.
After the playoffs, it was like, all right,
this guy's going to
be the second baseman.
Yep.
And then now it's back to a mix of Ian Happ and Zobrist and whatever. All right, so we doing this on covers.com office pools. It's called the Cap Figure Podcast. Just Google covers office pools and then find the Cap Figure Podcast. It's a public pool, and we're tracking our picks. You can bet fake money on baseball games every day. Only the over-under and the money line on who's going to win the game. And you bet between 1 and 500 units. And we've been testing theories. Tom was testing it a bunch of different things, but basically using your judgment, right, including weather and stuff. I'll let you summarize what your theory was in a minute. And I, all my strategy was either bet on underdogs that a lot of people have betting on the favorites in the game side of it, and in the over-under, when it's 80% or more, I changed it to, of the cash on one side, I've been going against the public. And so the results so far have been that has not worked out. The public, the majority has been right with the totals so far. It's small sample size. And underdogs in games where a lot of people bet the favorites have won me enough that even though I've lost almost every over-under bet, my username in this pool is up money because of winning with the underdogs. What about you? What are your results and what were you testing and what have you found?
Yeah, so if we recap, a few of the things I was testing were, one, very simple, was weather. If the wind is blowing out at greater than 10 miles per hour on a given game, I would go with the over if it was.
But have you done that? Have you looked up the weather for all of them?
I have done that. I've picked a couple of games where the weather was an outlier. The one in particular was Sunday, the San Francisco Giants against the Minnesota Twins. The wind was blowing out at, what is it called, Candlestick Park,
yeah.
The Giants Park, whatever, AT&T. It was blowing out at 19 miles an hour. I picked the over in that game. That worked. Other than that, another thing that I've been looking at is it's sort of just a gut reaction, but in a lot of cases, I feel like the ace starting pitchers, the line is undervalued for how much of a contribution or how much of an advantage that starting pitcher will give their team. So, for example, yesterday, Kershaw was only minus 150 against the Indians and Trevor Bauer, and I just thought that was a very cheap line relative to what Kershaw brings to a start.
Louder, yeah. Well, but you're wrong. I mean, it was 2-2 late in the game. I don't know. I feel like
I'm not paying attention to the results, but
you're a chalk. You're chalk, bro. So your strategy is bet favorites and weather.
Weather is in it, yeah.
So that's it. What there was nothing else you're testing. You suck. You're gonna go down. Any fan who wants to join, We don't have fans. We're not good enough to have fans. Any of our friends or Joey or anybody listening, join. Right, covers.com, or you just Google Covers office pools, because it's actually sort of hard to find where their office pools are on the Covers website. Covers fixed that, and then Cap Figure Podcast pool, and you could track your picks. But dude, wouldn't you have guessed that the public, you suggested I go against the public?
Yeah,
we're saying the public, but we don't know. When there's a majority of money bet on one side, it could be all sharp money. It could be all professional gamblers who are the ones making these percentages. But when the majority is on one way, you would have thought go against that would win, but it's not been the case so far.
Right.
Do you think it's because because runs are up and overs are just doing well this season? Or do you think that the public actually could be right this much of the time? Or is it a small sample size?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just that the rate of run scoring is higher than everybody thought. So I think, like you said, the public tends to go overs rather than unders,
right,
all things considered.
So whenever runs are up, they're going to win.
Right, and I think that is something I think eventually the books will take into consideration,
yeah,
where they'll just start pumping the over-under.
If that's the
up.
Case, then they have to, and then you would think it would resort. If not, my brain's exploding, and I'm bugging out, and I'm going to start betting with every Joe Schmo.
Because I would think the bookmakers would start implementing that really soon, because I think the way they view it is, like, let's take an average game. If someone wants to bet the over, whether it's 8.5 or 9, I don't think that makes that big of a difference to them.
To the better. Yeah. I think they have a decision. I mean,
like, I think
maybe the sharp money, like, then we get into a discussion of, what percentage is Steve Stevens money? Is smart, sharp money? And what percentage is the public money? The regular Joe Schmo money, right? And I don't know, Because to Steve Stevens, half a run matters, all right? You're going to go in there and you're going to
buy the extra half
a point. It's just a way to pump up the risk for you and the money for me, right?
Yep.
All right, so anyway, that'll do it. But join that snap. Anything else? We out. Anything else?
That's it.
All right, yo. Thank you. Leave a review. Tweet at us, a cap figure. Eat balls. I don't have a crystal ball or anything, but Ryan is retarded. Your son is a retard.